Sean, the first round is over and it was fantastic. History, so much stuff. The second round, we're recording this Tuesday. It begins tonight. Florida, Toronto, Dallas, Seattle. But before we get there, Sean, three game sevens. They were crazy. I was at one. First round ended Monday night in Newark. The Devils proved that their season was for real. They dominated that game. They dominated the Rangers four out of the last five games.
It was their speed. It's what we talked about going in. They skated the Rangers into the ground. Take game six out when their rookie goalie, Akira Schmid, maybe the most daring call of all the calls that were made in the first round to change series. That might have been the most daring one by Lindy Ruff. Take game six out. And after those first two games, Rangers were up 2-0 in the series. They had nothing. They couldn't move. They couldn't pass. They couldn't do anything. I thought game seven, if you're a Ranger player or fan, and you touched on it, Chris Kreider said it, it had to sting. You're all in.
Mm-hmm.
You're all in, and you can't get a goal against the kid who wasn't playing pro hockey 2 years ago and against the team that had 46 points the year before. You're all in. You got Patrick Kane on your team. You got Vladimir Tarasenko on your team. You got the best goalie in hockey on your team. And you just get run out of a building.
And their speed killed them. You're 100% right. And it really, what it did, beyond just the Devils' speed, what they made the Rangers look slow. I didn't think the Rangers were a slow team until I saw them play the Devils seven games and how the Devils' speed just overwhelmed them. But it didn't just overwhelm certain players. The Rangers' top players just did not deliver. They couldn't deliver. They weren't allowed to deliver, you know? But then they started to make some mistakes too. I mean, the mistake, Chris Kreider and Adam Fox, guilty of a turnover in the defensive zone, just as a power play is beginning. Like, it looked like that gave up the first goal in game seven to Michael McLeod. Like, Andre Palat outworking two guys named two of the Rangers stars and Chris Kreider and Adam Fox. That cannot happen as good as Andre Palat is. But look, they scored two goals in their four losses in this series. And Gerard Gallant brought it up. The Rangers coach brought it up after the game. He was asked about consistency of effort, and he said not enough. He wasn't going to hammer his team in the way that Rick Bonus hammered the Jets, okay? He did hammer his team after game four. He did that. He already went to that well. He didn't hammer them again after game seven, but it wasn't good enough. There wasn't enough consistency of effort on the Rangers side in this series, and there was, and the Devils just kept getting better and better. Then game six happened, fine, but then they come back. And better and better and better. Sean, I got to be honest with you. Like, I look around this playoff field right now. I don't know who can keep up with the Devils, especially in the Eastern Conference. Like, I don't know that there is a team that over a course of a seven-game series is going to be able to skate with them and shut them down because they're just too fast. They're so fast. They may be the fastest team we've seen in NHL history. Because it's the game is the fastest we've ever seen it right now, and there's no team that matches the Devils.
Wow, you're treading some pretty serious territory there.
But you see what I'm saying, though?
I do. I don't know if I'm going to say they're the fastest team I've ever seen in the NHL. Maybe. It's such a hard thing to quantify. I want to plant a flag here. I want to actually plant two flags here. I want to go back to Rick Bonus, but we're going to do it later because I was at that series, and I take exception with what you say. But we're going to do it later. We're going to have Emily Benjamin on very shortly to talk about the Boston Bruins and the fact that Florida is opening the playoffs today, which I don't think anybody was going to utter. Look, you said it in your intro. The Florida Panthers are playing today.
Yeah.
I wanted to say it because I love them so much. The Colorado Avalanche aren't playing today. It's the Seattle Kraken that are playing. Like, this is crazy. This is absolute crazy town, and we have so much to talk about, but we got to get to Emily Benjamin because that is the story of the NHL as well as we woke up the other day, but we haven't had a chance to talk about it yet, and we got to do it before we get to what's going to be a unbelievably compelling round two.
Definitely. And Emily Benjamin, our Boston-based staff writer, she covers the Bruins. She covered that series, the historically good Boston Bruins in the regular season, out in the first round. We talked to Emily all about it. Here is that interview. Emily, thanks for joining us. What happened to the Bruins?
I wish I had an answer. I mean, I think
that's what we pay you for, Emily.
The short answer is that no one played well. With a very small list of exceptions, every single player on this Bruins team had a series that was not as good as they had been in the regular season. You can maybe accept Brad Marchand, Brandon Carlo, Taylor Hall. Other than that, everyone performed worse than in the regular season. And that's not a way that you can win a series, especially against the way Matthew Tkachuk was playing.
Yeah, throw Tyler Bertuzzi under the bus. You got to add him to the list. He needs a little bit of credit. But
on the offensive end, not on the defensive end.
Fair enough. Please, please tell me that Linus Ullmark was hurt.
We will find out. We're heading over to Warrior Ice Arena for some breakup day fun today. But, you know, it really is kind of inexplicable. This guy was unbelievable in the regular season, and he just kind of cratered in the postseason. I think hurt is probably the most likely explanation. But this is also a guy who only had two games of playoff experience coming into this series. Did that play a part in it? Maybe. I think it's hard to know at this point. But yeah, they did not get the goaltending that they needed. And I think one of the really big question marks is whether or not Jim Montgomery should have gone to Jeremy Swayman earlier in this series for a couple of reasons. First, because, you know, they did this goalie rotation all season. I know you guys have talked a lot about what the Wild did and whether that was smart or not. But in game five, you have three more chances to win. Why not go to Jeremy Swayman then? And then if Ullmark is hurt, he gets more time to rest. You get Swayman in the mix. So that's going to be a big question going forward for Jim Montgomery, is how he used his goalies in the postseason.
We could ask all these questions, and I'm sure they'll all get asked, maybe not all answered, but here it is. They're up 3-1 in the series, and Brad Marchand has the winner on his stick on a breakaway in the last second of game five. He doesn't score. Okay, right? Fine. They lose three in a row. Like it was inexplicable to me how that they could do that. And that's with all due respect to the Florida Panthers. But I do wonder, and you wrote about it before the series started. I know you talked to a lot of people, the burden of history, you know, I mean, that's a thing. It really is a thing that these guys, and we talked about it. I've said it, I've written about it too. Like this regular season, as great as it was, all it did was get them to game one. And I do wonder if there was a feeling that it was just going to happen for the Bruins, because it happened all season, and they didn't really face any adversity during the season. They just did. They just kept winning. Did you get a sense from them at all that it was just like the stun of it was, well, we just thought it was going to happen?
I think yes and no. I think to me, I think they overlooked their first round opponent. You know, I think Montgomery was clear about saying that we were not necessarily ready for playoff hockey in those first two games. So I think this is a team that maybe, I don't know if they said the Stanley Cup is just going to happen. I mean, they have guys who have been through this too many times, I think, to just say that. You know, that loss in 2019, game seven to the St. Louis Blues, still stings a lot of the guys in that room. So I think they knew how hard it would be, but I think they looked at the Florida Panthers and said, this team isn't good enough to beat us. I think maybe if you get to the second round, they wouldn't have overlooked the Maple Leafs. They wouldn't have overlooked the Lightning. But I think maybe they came into this series saying, five games, you know, like many of us did, five games, we're done. We got the Panthers. Then we'll get to the challenge. And that, I think, was a fatal flaw.
Just a worse loss than the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Absolutely. I think for two reasons. That Tampa team hadn't done it yet. So they didn't know. They were still on the way up. They didn't know how hard it was to do. They didn't know what the work took. They didn't have the sort of that veteran core that had done it before. And secondly, they had three chances to win this. They were up 3-2-1. You win game five, you win game six, you win game seven. Doesn't matter which one of those you won. And you came 59.3 seconds from doing it. They were up with less than a minute left in game seven. You know, not even saying that you mean Marchand could have scored in that breakaway, but you know, he didn't. He was still left talking about that after game seven. He said, "I had it on my stick." And I'm sure that will haunt him. But you were up in, they were up in game six. They got the lead in the third period. They had so many chances. And this is a team that was the best third period team in hockey by a mile. They scored 113 goals. They allowed 59. They scored the most. They allowed the fewest in the third period. This was a team that knew how to close teams, shut teams out in the third, and they just couldn't end it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's worse than the Tampa loss. I covered that Tampa series, and they were up in the first period of game one, but that was about it, and that was a sweep. The Bruins, they were a better team, number one, than that Lightning team, and number two, they had, like you said, three opportunities to win it. All right, so the big question now, with the, we know the result, the big question, and we do want to ask you about the Panthers, too, since they are the team that is moving on and will play tonight as we record this Tuesday, but Patrice Bergeron, what's your gut feeling?
My gut feeling is this is it. You know, I think the way he looked after that game, I think all he gave to this season, I think this is it. The way Brad Marchand was talking after the game. I think the way players were talking going into the game. I mean, Taylor Hall was talking about how, you know, part of what we're looking for is playing this, pushing this forward for Krejci and Bergeron. And I mean, Bergeron said after the game, I'm going to think about it. I'm going to talk to my family. I'm going to figure this out. And he certainly played well enough this season to continue his career. You know, this is a guy who very easily might win his sixth Selke trophy at the end of this year. This is not a guy who is done. But to me, I think the Bruins are looking at the loss of Krejci and Bergeron after this season. And there are going to be a ton of questions for this team going forward about where they go from here.
What a sad final picture for Patrice Bergeron for a great career. It'd be awful if this is the way he goes out. That picture of him greeting everybody coming off the ice would be a horrible postscript. So let me ask you this, because Dan mentioned we want to talk to you about the Florida Panthers, and I really want to talk to you about the Florida Panthers. And I'm going to be positive here. So I'm going to ask you about the job Paul Maurice did coaching instead of the job that Montgomery did coaching. Taking the positive here, Emily.
Paul Maurice was masterful in this series. He hit all the right notes in what he said publicly, in the way he pumped his team up, in the way he set his team against the Bruins, in what he did, in the way he switched from Alex Lyon to Sergei Bobrovsky when he needed to. You know, he pulled that trigger when it was the time to do so. And I think that, you know, obviously Paul Maurice is a guy who has a long, long history in the NHL. He has been in just about every situation you can be as a coach. And I think his experience and his way of working that room showed. And he did, he was absolutely the better coach in this series.
And the best player on the ice was Matthew Tkachuk.
No question.
You got to win a playoff series with the best player on the ice being on your side, right? And his difference making. What were the Bruins saying about Matthew Tkachuk? I mean, what was the feeling on they probably grew to really hate him by the end of this series, didn't they? And for all the right reasons for the Florida Panthers.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing, is if you are going to play the heel, if you are going to be that guy, if you are going to be in people's faces and talking up your team, you have to back it up. And Matthew Tkachuk did exactly that in this series. I mean, the Bruins are very familiar with that kind of player. They have one on their side in Brad Marchand. They have seen someone do this before. Matthew Tkachuk played that role perfectly. I mean, the comments he had, no one believes in us. No one wants to see us back here for game seven, but we're going to be back here in Boston. He had all the confidence in the world. And then again, as you said, he backed it up. He had the overtime winner. He scored the goal to go to tie the score in game six at 5-5. He was there in the absolute biggest moments, just you know, ripping up that ice. He was so good. And I think that this season we have all gotten a renewed appreciation or a new appreciation for Tkachuk and the game he is playing. And now we, not that we didn't know before, but we see what the Panthers were doing mm-hmm. in making that trade, getting him. That is what they were missing last season when they won the President's Trophy and didn't make it as far as they needed to go. He is the difference maker.
I'm going to be a little contrary here. What about Brandon Montour?
Like, he was good.
He was so good for them. He scored every big goal they needed.
Nobody is knocking Brandon Montour here. He was excellent. Took a few too many penalties.
He was the best defenseman on the ice. And the Bruins are supposed to have some pretty good defensemen.
I mean, I will not argue with you that the Bruins defensemen were ghosts in this series. Hampus Lindholm, ghost. Charlie McAvoy was good, not as good as he needed to be. The rest of them disappeared. But I will say that the way that Matthew Tkachuk led that team on and off the ice, I think takes him up. But again, I'm not arguing that Brandon Montour was very, very good in this series. He has had a breakout year.
We all knew who Matthew Tkachuk was. And only loyal listeners of the podcast knew who Brandon Montour was because, what was it, Dan, 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, we had Paul Maurice on this very show.
Yeah.
And he sung the praises of Brandon Montour and how he was a rover and how he could eat teams alive with his skating and how he was the most dangerous player on the ice at times because of the way that he could play almost any position. And then what came to pass? Exactly that.
He was terrific in the series. 5 goals, most goals by a defenseman in a playoff series in 20 years or more than 20 years or something like that. He's going to be huge for them as you continue on here if you're the Florida Panthers. But one last question from me on the Bruins. So you touched on Bergeron and Krejci, right? And you think that this is going to be the beginning of the post-Bergeron and Krejci era now in Boston. Here's the problem. It's only $3.5 million off your cap, right? I mean, your top two centers only took up $3.5 million on the salary cap this year. $1 million for Krejci. I think it was $2.5 million for Bergeron. So what do the Bruins look like next year?
It's going to be very different. The good news is there's good news and bad news. The bad news is they have a lot of unrestricted free agents on that team, especially up front. So you're also losing Nick Foligno's cap hit. I mean, there is some money coming off the books. Not enough. I mean, it truly shows you how masterful a job that Don Sweeney and Evan Gold did in signing those two for what he did, mm-hmm. what they did. That they were paying them nothing for your top two centers. But yes, now your top two centers are Pavel Zacha and Charlie Coyle. And as good as Charlie Coyle was at times in this series, that is not the recipe for a team that is going to go far in the playoffs next season. They're going to have a lot of work to do.
And Pasternak's going up almost $5 million from what he was. So he's going to take up what he does going up in the cap, takes up more space than they're losing from Krejci and Bergeron. It's way earlier than we thought, but Emily, this is going to be one strange, weird offseason for the Boston Bruins, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I think everybody has to remember that Cam Neely was talking about the question of whether this team was going to have to rebuild after last season, because we still didn't know what was going to happen with Krejci, who was back in Czech Republic. We didn't know what was going to happen with Bergeron. And so they contemplated the question of, we're going to have to tear this down if we don't have those two guys. They got them back. They went on this magical run. They lost in the first round. Now you're looking at the same situation. You know, are you going to have to do some teardown of this team to get it back where you want it to be? I mean, the contracts to McAvoy and Pasternak say no, but this team does not have a lot of reinforcements coming. They do not have a lot of draft picks coming. They really wagered it all on this season. And now they're playing golf after the first round. A lot of questions coming for the Bruins.
I have one for you before you leave. Are we talking about this team in April next year? For the right reasons?
I think so, but it's going to be a lot different of a conversation than it is this year. You're starting to look at that Pittsburgh Penguins situation where this year everyone went into this saying, can anyone beat the Bruins? And it's going to be a very, very different conversation. I mean, so far, Sweeney has been able to add to this roster and keep it going. But at some point, that comes to an end for every team.
You're getting your started on your off season with the Bruins, but we'll continue on covering the playoffs. Emily, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Good stuff there from Emily, who later on today, Tuesday, is going to be handling Bruins breakup day, which will be interesting. And I'm sure there'll be some fallout from that we could be talking about next week, potentially, Sean. And like we said at the top, the second round, you know, it begins tonight. You got the Florida Panthers, who would have thunk it, against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Who would have thunk it, by the way? Toronto Maple Leafs, first time in 19 years they win a round. We haven't even touched on that yet. We will. Seattle Kraken, they beat the defending Stanley Cup champions. And the Dallas Stars, they play tonight. And then you got the Vegas Golden Knights and the Edmonton Oilers. And you've got the New Jersey Devils and the Carolina Hurricanes. But quickly, Sean, one last thing on the Bruins. Emily said yes to your question. She thinks we'll be talking about the Bruins in a positive way in April, meaning, you know, they'll be a playoff team again. There's a lot of questions, as we touched on with her. There's a lot of pending unrestricted free agents. We don't know what's going to happen with Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci. I think we have an idea. I agree with her. I think they're both done, to be honest with you. But we've talked for a while now about the Buffalo Sabres. When is it going to be their turn? Almost was this year, right? What about the Ottawa Senators? When's it going to be their turn? Like, they were better this season. The Detroit Red Wings, up-and-coming team, getting closer, right? I don't think Toronto's going anywhere. Don't think Florida's going anywhere. Not ready to say Tampa's going anywhere. But the Bruins might be. So I don't know. I don't think this, to me, seems very familiar to last year. That one of these teams is going to fall down. And a year ago, I was saying it was the Bruins. Dead wrong for how they were in the regular season. But I'm going to say it again. And maybe I'm crazy. Maybe that's just insane to not believe in the Boston Bruins and not believe in, you know, what Don Sweeney and Cam Neely do there and Jim Montgomery is the coach. But, I mean, Sean, we have no idea what this team is going to look like next year. No clue. We know that Pasternak's there. We know McAvoy's there. And they've got, you know, a number of pieces in place, but their heart and soul might not be there. And so I do wonder. I really do wonder if we're going to be talking about them in a positive way in April.
Well, I think they have a heart and soul replacement in Marchand. I think it's somewhat seamless. The Boston way will continue. But they got some company in falling down. So they do have some wiggle room. If Buffalo comes, that's okay, because what are the New York Islanders going to do? What are the Pittsburgh Penguins going to do? Emily touched on it a little bit. They didn't make it this year with their big three. Now they're all going to be a year older. I don't know that there's any relief on the way. New management. They're certainly not on the rise. They're desperately clawing to stay around that middle of the pack run. So there's a lot of company there that gives Boston some wiggle room. I think we're talking about them in a positive way too. I think their demise is at least a year away, if not more, just because I think this will fuel them next year and will cause them to maybe play better than they should, because embarrassment does that a lot of times. So, but I don't think it's clear cut that they're the team that would come out if Buffalo came in, or even if Detroit or Ottawa came in with Buffalo. You know, they got some teams. There's some teams in the East that there's a lot of questions about. I mean, the Capitals didn't make it this year. No idea if they'll make it next year. There's certainly a changing of the guard here.
Well, no question. I mean, look at the second round. You know, the second round details the changing of the guard. You know, you got the New Jersey Devils coming up maybe a year earlier. Well, that's what everybody said about, even, you know, the Devils in people inside the organization were a year early. Well, they're in the second round, right? I mean, the Florida Panthers have moved on. The Toronto Maple Leafs never win. They finally get the job done. Seattle, second year, they're in. Dallas looks good. Doesn't look like it's going anywhere. Edmonton looks really good. Doesn't look like it's going anywhere. And Vegas, you know, Carolina's been there, you know, so I got to give them that. And Vegas had been there before, but they're back now too. it's a bit of a changing of the guard. We're going to get a fresh look. I mean, the Stanley Cup final, Sean, we're either going to, you know, the cities that we could be going to, you know, look at it. Vegas, we've been to recently. Edmonton, Dallas, Seattle, not so recent. And in the East, New Jersey, 2012, Carolina, 2006, Toronto, I don't want to even go there. In Florida, 96, right? I mean, what was it? When was the last time Toronto was in? 90. When was the last time the Toronto Maple Leafs were in the Stanley Cup final?
Were you alive?
I'm trying to. When was the last time the true? All right. Anyway, doesn't matter. It's a fresh look. It's different. I like it. I'm all for it. It's not the same. I mean, look, we have no control over these things. But
yes, we do, Dan. We control it all.
You might. You're a bigger boss than I am. You're a bigger boss than I am. So maybe you do have the control. You push a few buttons and things happen. I know that's how it works, right?
You don't read the forums that the referees shape the games, and the NHL wants certain teams to win because they certainly want the Devils in, and they didn't want the Bruins in. They'd rather have the Panthers in. They'd rather have the Kraken in than the Avalanche. And so we do. We control the whole thing, but let's continue.
You see what I'm saying? I mean, it's a fresher look. It's different. And I'm all for it right now. I like these matchups in the second round. I like what we have ahead of us here. I'm particularly interested in Vegas Edmonton. Like, I think that could be the best second round matchup that we got here. You've covered the Golden Knights. You it's McDavid Eichel. You wrote about that. I mean, there's some really good storylines in this one.
It's going to be an unbelievable series, a marquee series to me in the second round. The talent that's on the ice, I mean, we've talked about it, right? McDavid and Draisaitl combined for 21 points in the first round. Their power play is 56%. Like, they basically, every two power plays they get a goal. Bouchard had an unbelievable first round for Edmonton. We're going to have a story on him today with a couple of pretty good defensemen in Paul Coffey and Phil Housley talking about him and what he's done. He's done it completely under the radar because of McDavid and Draisaitl, right? So there's all that talent on the Edmonton side, the high-powered power play. And then on the Vegas side, like, they're just a four-line team, right? Mark Stone's your third-line guy, and he's unbelievable. He's come back, and he's played like he never missed a beat. Not that he missed 3 months with back surgery and you know, looked awful in game one. Somehow between game one and game two, he turned everything around. It's him and Chandler Stephenson on that third line. You know, Jack Eichel, a little bit of the misfits are still around. Their fourth line is unbelievable. They probably have the deepest defense in the playoffs. You know, so I think they can slow them down. They don't take penalties, which is good, but they also can't kill penalties, which is bad.
Yeah.
They were horrible against Winnipeg in killing penalties. I think the two areas where you can kind of look at it and say where the series is going to be one is goaltending. Neither goalie, neither Laurent Brossoit for Vegas or Stuart Skinner for Edmonton has ever been here before. This is Skinner's first run. Brossoit played like 25 minutes 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Bruce Cassidy talked about that and how for a series with so many established players and so many people with great resumes, the series very well could come down to which goalie decides that they belong on this stage and takes it. And then to me, the other area where Vegas can kind of hang its hat is, I just mentioned his name, is Bruce Cassidy. He has the experience, you know, and we've seen that play out in these playoffs where coaches have had a huge impact in series. And I think Bruce can do that here. But I think it's going to be just wild, wild hockey, difference in style, and who can establish their style and all kinds of strategies going to go into it. It's going to be riveting.
I think it's time we start to give the Edmonton Oilers credit for a little bit more credit for their depth. I think we need to start talking more about the Oilers as less of a two-man team and more of a complete team. I give Ken Holland credit for that, you know, with some of the additions, you know, that they made. I think Jay Woodcroft deserves credit for working the players into the mix. But you look at that team in six games against the Kings, they had 10 different goal scorers in that series. Guy like Klim Kostin had three goals in that series. Kyler Yamamoto had a big goal. You know, Brett Kulak had a big goal. Yes, Draisaitl and McDavid run the show. Okay. But you need that. You need that if, you know, if you're going to win, you need guys to be your alpha dogs, right? Your big guys. But other guys are really stepping up here. And it's not always just Evander Kane, Zach Hyman, and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. It's other guys too. And I think we need to start giving the Oilers more credit for the depth that they have. I don't think they win that series the way they do against LA without their depth and without key guys who are not named Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid coming through. And I think that's something that to watch for here in this series against Vegas, because you mentioned it. Vegas is a four-line team. They roll four at you, right? They're comfortable doing that. I think Edmonton is too. And when they need to go in a different route, whether it's 11-7 or double shifting, well, they're going to be putting, you know, arguably the two best players in the league or two of the, you know, three or four best players in the league on the ice more. I mean, that their depth is important. Their top guys are important, but I think they deserve more credit for what they are now and how they got to this position. Last year, it was they got to the Western Conference Final on the backs of McDavid and Draisaitl. They did. Now it's getting there on the backs of a lot more guys to the second round, at least.
I'll give you credit. I'll give them credit. They're a deeper team. They proved it in the first round. Vegas will cave them in after the first two lines. That you want to talk a depth war, and the playoffs often turn into a depth war, they'll cave them in. They are such a deep team. When you think about their team and how they play and the way that Bruce Cassidy uses his team, they will absolutely, if you're talking bottom six forwards, which is not a sexy thing to talk, but it's important in the playoffs.
It's huge.
Their bottom six will cave in Edmonton's bottom six.
So is your pick Vegas in the series?
I did pick Vegas.
You did? Yeah. And I picked Edmonton.
No, and I think it's going to go deep. And look, they got to figure out how to stop. Not stop. Like Bruce already said, you can't stop these guys.
You can't stop McDavid. You can't figure out how to stop McDavid.
No, it's either one happening. Of them. Draisaitl was maybe better in the first round.
He was in the first round, yeah.
And so you have to limit them. But let's be honest. The reason that Edmonton advanced is because they outscored their mistakes.
Well, their power play, like you said, scored.
Yeah.
It was 56%. I mean, it's insane.
But they outscored their mistakes. 4+ goals a game, and they didn't blow out the Kings. I don't think Vegas is giving up 4 goals a game to Edmonton, even if McDavid and Draisaitl are playing well. I don't. And look, the wild card is Brossoit. If he doesn't play well, then all bets are off. But I like what I've seen. I have a story coming up in the next couple of days about him and kind of his journey. And this is the first time since he was 18 years old that his body will do what he wants it to do. And it has freed him up in a way mentally that is almost incalculable. So I really like the way he's played. He's a unicorn when it comes to goalies. Like, he does things and he's built in a way that almost no other goalie in the league has ever been built.
Looking forward to reading your story. You know what the most interesting stat is for this series, though? The Vegas Golden Knights penalty kill is 2 percentage points better than the Edmonton Oilers power play in the first round. 58.3%.
Yep. So before we move on, Winnipeg would have got crushed in the series.
Oh, you wanted to go through this. Okay,
if it wasn't for its power play. But you brought up early in the show.
Bonus.
The bonus filleted his team. I don't believe that to be true. I believe that was an honest statement hidden in the emotion of the moment. This Winnipeg team has done this year after year after year. They played game 5 like it was an exhibition game. And you can tell me that they didn't have their best defenseman, that they didn't have their highest scoring forward, that they had another really important forward playing his first game in 10 days. You can tell me all these things that you want to tell me, all these excuses. They played like that game didn't matter. And that, to me, and to Rick Bonus, was inexcusable. He walked back disgusting. Look, that performance after game 5 was unbelievable, because I was going to do Vegas. I was actually sitting in the room waiting for Bruce Cassidy to come, and Rick hadn't come yet. He sat down. He goes, "This is going to be quick."
Yeah.
A minute later, it was done. And there was a whole story there. And then they go home and the players say, "That's not right. What he said isn't right." he should have talked to us. Let me tell you something about Rick Bonus. You know where you stand with Rick Bonus. That was not a surprise that that was how he felt when the series was over. He held it in for the whole series, and he believed that they could come back and they could win. That had been since January, since they slipped from first place in the Central, first place in the West, all the way down to barely getting into the playoffs. He said, every time we've been challenged, we haven't stood up to the challenge. And to me, part of the problem is that the players came home and said, that was mean. And Rick Bonus walked his statement back. He'll be the coach there next year. It's already been decided. I think that's the right move. Rick Bonus bleeds Winnipeg white and blue. But at some point, you got to take accountability for what you did.
This goes back to Paul Maurice leaving Winnipeg. This is a conversation we could have all offseason, by the way. But so quickly before we get, I do want to get a little bit to the differences here between in one of these other series, New Jersey, Carolina. We talked a little bit about the Devils at the top, but I want to talk about that series. But to me, this goes back to Paul Maurice leaving. He couldn't get more out of that group, right? Paul Maurice is in the second round of the playoffs right now with the team that he's trying to build. You know, it's not exactly what the Jets were, but you know, there's some similarities to what they were when they were under Paul Maurice. It goes back to that. And Rick Bonus has been holding those statements in since January or February. The emotion of the moment came out. Sean, we'll talk about this more, but tear it down and restart it.
At least he waited till the playoffs were over. Not like Gallant.
Well, Gallant filleted them after game four. Yeah.
Three minute
filleting.
What does that accomplish?
Well, it didn't accomplish anything because they went out and lost 4-0 in game five. So, it didn't. And he couldn't go to the well in game five. He couldn't go to that well in game five. He couldn't do it because he had already done it in game four. And
they lost 2 out of 3 after and didn't score any goals.
Didn't score any goals in the two losses. Yeah, it accomplished nothing. It accomplished nothing. Bonus waited until after. But my last thought on the Jets is tear it down as much as you can. Restart it. Because this group's not getting it done
it's going to be hard to tear it down. A lot of players have been smeared by this.
Yeah, it's going to be very hard to do, but you got to do the best you can. All right, so New Jersey, Carolina. We touched on the Devils at the start. We talked all about their speed and how it overwhelmed the Rangers. I think it's going to overwhelm Carolina. And my worry here for the Hurricanes is as good as they are at playing their game, you know what I mean? Like, as good as they are at playing that aggressive forechecking game, that in-your-face game, I don't see how they get to it on a consistent basis against this New Jersey team the way the Devils are playing right now. And the Devils are not taking a break either. You know, 48 hours after beating the Rangers, less than 48 hours after beating the Rangers, the puck's going to drop at PNC Arena for game one Wednesday night. They're rolling right through. This is an excited team. Jack Hughes said after the game the other Monday night, he said, you always thought the regular season, you know, was fun and exciting. It's nothing compared to this. We're ready to go. Like, they're ready to rock here. And the Hurricanes have, you know, that we know they're injured. Key guys being out. I don't see how they get to their game. The game that makes them successful. I don't see how they can play it against the Devils.
Well, because they're a veteran team that's been through some wars. They have a really, 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 really good coach.
Yeah.
Maybe the best coach left in the field.
Maybe.
They have.
Who hasn't gotten his team, by the way, over this hump.
Yeah. Yeah. They have a distinct home ice advantage, which I don't know is going to intimidate the Devils because they weren't intimidated at the world's most famous arena.
The Mecca.
The most famous arena.
The most famous. Aaron Rodgers was there.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
He was everywhere.
Judge was there.
Michael Fox was there. It's the world's most famous arena. It is a cathedral of hockey. I can't believe that they didn't move game seven there and they let it be played in the Prudential Center. That amazes me.
Dripping with sarcasm right now. It's just falling off of you.
Yeah. So I do see ways. I actually picked, if I can remember, in my stupor of you guys making me get up at 7 a.m. in Vegas, which is a crime against humanity, I think I picked Carolina. I'd have to consult my notes, but I think I picked Carolina. I think I picked I'm pretty sure I picked just the veteran thing. At some point, look, adrenaline's a wonderful drug. At some point, it wears off, right? Reality kind of hits. And look, they have youthful legs, the Devils, and they're full of excitement. But at some point, playing every second day catches up with even the youngest guys. So, again, you look at it, I think that's the best of the two East series. You know, we talked about Vegas and Edmonton being the best of the West. I think that's a little bit, hockey-wise, a little bit better than Toronto and Florida. But that Toronto-Florida series is everything.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think New Jersey-Carolina is going to be very interesting, you know, because of the differences in style. Yeah. You know, it's who's going to be able to play it to the best of their ability. And that's why I just don't see how Carolina could do it over a 7-game series against New Jersey. I don't think they have enough. I don't think they have enough speed. I don't think they have enough scoring. I look, Akira Schmid looks pretty good, right? You know, and he doesn't have the warts on him like Antti Raanta and Freddie Anderson do. So they could be coming. I don't know. But then you look at the Toronto Florida series though, Sean, I mean, that's going to be fun. That's, you know, that's Matthew Tkachuk getting in everybody's faces, trying to frustrate Austin Matthews and Mitchell Marner. You know, it's Barkov doing what he does against some of the elite centers in the game on the other side. Can Bobrovsky stop the puck enough in that series for the Panthers to win? Are we going to see Alex Lyon in that series? Paul Maurice used to coach the Leafs, so he's going up against one of his former teams. You got the team that just is coming off of a massive high, having knocked off the best team ever assembled for the regular season, and the other team coming off the massive high because they knocked off the team that went to the Stanley Cup final 3 straight years, and finally they get out of the first round. They get that monkey off their back. Here's my concern for the Toronto Maple Leafs and a little bit of a prediction, if you will. They're very happy it's not the Boston Bruins that they're facing. And that's going to be to their detriment.
You know what the series is going to be? It's going to be Days of Our Lives for hockey fans. This is going to be the ultimate soap opera. It's going to be crazy. And do you think the Maple Leafs were under pressure before? Now they're under pressure because now the field's wide open.
Now they're supposed to win.
Yeah, they're the favorite. I could come out of the East. They're the best team. So the pressure's going to ratchet up. I was thinking about this when I was walking home from dinner last night. Is there a more hated family? The Canadian people don't hate anybody. They're the nicest human beings ever. Is there a more hated family than the Tkachuk family in Toronto? Right? You're going to have Matthew come in and he is going to play the heel and he is going to love it. He is going to crave it. You got the other kid, the other brother coming in all the time with Ottawa in the Battle of Ontario, just raising hell. And then the old man did the same thing, plus internationally broke their hearts in the World Cup of Hockey. That Tkachuk family, they're like public enemy number one in Toronto. And it's going to be, and they all revel in it. They're all going to show up. And it's going to be like a wrestling storyline. Like, it might be more interesting what's happening in the stands with the Tkachuks that aren't playing than what's happening on the ice with the one that is.
Well, they are a reality show. They are a walking, talking reality show. It's great. But here's another interesting thing here with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And by the way, if you haven't figured it out by now, I picked the Florida Panthers to win this series. They're going to be playing. This is a different style that they're going to be facing here, right? So in Tampa, it was the methodical way of beating you. That's how the Lightning did it. And they were better. Look, they were better. The Tampa Bay Lightning were the better team, played better hockey in that series than the Toronto Maple Leafs. You want to go on the old argument? Well, the better team always wins, right? Well, the Leafs won, but the Lightning, I think, for more minutes in that series, were a better team, played better than the Leafs. But it wasn't an in-your-face all-the-time style. It was methodical. The Panthers are going to be in their face. It's going to be frustrating. It's going to get under their skin. And they're going to have to deal with that now. It's different. They dealt with the Lightning. They dealt with the monkey that's on their back. They got it off. But now they're going to be dealing with a totally different style of hockey and different competitors and in Florida. Not, I'm not saying the Lightning aren't competitors. That'd be crazy, but just a different style. And I like the Panthers in this series because I like the way they are going to be able, I think they're going to be able to get under Toronto's skin a little bit. I think they're going to frustrate them and they can score with them. They can score with them. And it's not, Bobrovsky wasn't great against the Bruins. He was good. He was really good at times, but he wasn't great against the Bruins. He did allow a number of goals, but I don't know that Samsonov's going to be that great in this series either. And I think he could get frustrated as well.
I just want to get this straight. You're trying to tell me that the Florida Panthers, who lost in the second round as the President's Trophy champions, are a more playoff hardened team than the three-time.
No, I did not say that. Did not say that. It's a different style that they're going to face. And I think that what's going to happen here is the Panthers are going to get under their skin of the Maple Leafs. They're going to frustrate them. What Tampa had done for years was not frustrate by getting under the skin of the Leafs or their opponents. They frustrated their opponents by methodically beating them. Just shift after shift after shift in a different way than Florida's going to play. And that is why I think it could be a struggle here for Toronto in a different way than it's been a struggle for them against teams like the Tampa Bay Lightning, just not this season. No, I am not comparing the Florida Panthers as a playoff hardened team to the Tampa Bay Lightning. I'm saying the style of hockey is a little bit different.
So the Tampa Bay Lightning, they don't have Corey Perry. They don't have Pat Maroon.
They do. They don't have Blake Holm, but they, you know,
no, they did.
They did. Yeah. Yeah,
they've always had that. They've always had that identity. That's a part of their identity.
It's a part.
And I would argue that Corey Perry, other than the fact that he's not going to score as many goals as Tkachuk, is even more annoying.
Well, he is, but he's not on the ice near as much as Matthew Tkachuk.
So I don't.
He's not near as effective.
I don't think that's an issue for Toronto at all.
I think you're wrong.
They can play that game. They don't care about that. Oh, they're going to be in our face. They're going to make us feel bad. Like, no, like, come on. I don't even think that's what got to the Bruins. Like, it wasn't that. It was them, right? And I think it's the same thing for Toronto. Toronto, if they lose the series, are going to beat themselves. Florida's not going to beat them. Look, I think there's a very good chance that Toronto beats itself. But I'm not going to sit here and say that the Florida Panthers are more cut out for playoff hockey than the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think that's silly at this point.
Well, we'll find out. That's why they play the games, right?
Well, we won't find out, because even if Toronto wins, it won't be because of their quote unquote in your face style.
You don't know that?
I do know that.
You don't know that?
I do. I'm telling you right now, that is not why they lose if they lose.
Okay. Well, we'll find out. We'll find out. Last one. We haven't touched on it before we get out of here. Dallas, Seattle. So, I mean, what a great story the Seattle Kraken are, to go in to Denver to win that game, you know, to win game seven. Oliver Bjorkstrand could have had 12 goals in that game. I think he ended up with two, but he hit the post about 975 times, I think, in that game. What a great story. Their depth has obviously carried them all year. The goaltending came through. Grubauer was good. But this Dallas Stars team right now looks really good. Clicking, goaltending, experienced coaching in this situation. I like Dallas in this series.
Oh, me too. I picked Dallas. I think they're the best team left that nobody's talking about.
Yeah.
I think they have the best goalie left in the tournament, which is huge.
100%. And he's not just about, I mean, I don't know that
there's
nobody close.
There is nobody close. Like, that's the one thing you think about when you think about playoff hockey. You're like, oh, goaltending. And then you look around. We talked about the Vegas-Edmonton series. It's a disaster, right? Yeah. In New Jersey, it's a guy with five playoff games.
22-year-old rookie goalie. You don't know. He's been really good, but you don't know how he's going to handle it going forward.
Carolina, they don't even know who their goalie is. They might play both in the second round. Like, the goaltending, same thing in Florida, right? It's Bobrovsky and Lyon. They both played in the first round. And then and it's Samsonov in Toronto, and he was let go by the Capitals because he couldn't perform in the playoffs. So there is goaltending questions everywhere, including in Seattle. Grubauer was very good. I don't know how good he's going to be against this Dallas team, but I didn't think he was going to be good against Colorado. But there are no questions about Ottinger. He is the best goalie left in the tournament. Pete DeBoer is one of the best coaches left in the tournament. Roope Hintz is a player that nobody talks about.
Yep.
He is the leading scorer in the playoffs right now. It is not Draisaitl. It is not McDavid. It is not Austin Matthews. It is not any of these people. It's Hintz.
12 points.
He is an unbelievable player. They play so well together as a team that it's really hard to generate anything against them. I don't see Seattle's depth being a problem for them. I didn't think it was going to be a problem for Colorado. I thought Colorado had every advantage. I thought they had the better goaltender. I thought they had the better coach. I thought they had the better defenseman. And I thought they had the better player in McKinnon. And Seattle proved me wrong. Good for them. I don't think they're proving me wrong twice in a row.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. Look, at the end of the day with Colorado, it came down to just too many guys not able to play. You know, they were not even close to the team that won the Stanley Cup in terms of their depth and how they were able to roll their lines and the contributions they got. It was just too many guys not able to play. Losing Valeri Nichushkin was a huge blow. You know, I mean, we knew about Landeskog all year, but it comes to even, you know, mean more now, you know, to not have him.
Cogliano too.
He
was the voice of the team. Like he was the guy. He would have been invaluable in game 7, I think.
Yeah.
But Seattle had injuries too. When McCann was hurt, whatever. Yeah. Full props to them. I don't think you can sing their praises enough. What they did in that first round was historic, unbelievable. Look, it's not Florida against Boston. It's not far behind. I mean, the numbers don't suggest it because Colorado didn't have a great year statistically, but you're still talking about the defending Stanley Cup champion. And that's a special team, and it takes a special team to send them home early. I never said anything bad publicly, but I'm still going to apologize to Dave Haxtell. I didn't think he had it in him. So congratulations to him for coaching that team into the second round. I was always curious about how that would play out. To me, I thought that was going to be the biggest difference in the first round was Jared Bednar's won at every level he's ever been at. He won the Stanley Cup. I thought he was going to coach rings around Dave Haxtell, and he didn't.
He just didn't have enough weapons.
Yeah.
He just didn't have enough weapons at his disposal, whereas Haxtell did. And good on, I agree with you. I mean, good on them, but I don't see how they can handle Dallas, who has the weapons and has the best goalie. So I think we're very much in agreement here with the Dallas Stars. And to just further that point on the goaltending, like Ottinger's, it's not close. In the goalie field right now in the playoffs, Ottinger is by far and away the best one. And then Roope Hintz, Sean, you said it. We're not talking enough about, nobody talks about Roope Hintz. I think I saw something. I think it was Max Domi. I want to give
it was credit. Max Domi.
Yeah. When he said, what was it that he said? He said something like,
you were building a player in EA, NHL, he's the player you would build. He has everything you would put into it, basically, because if you play video hockey, like you can create a player and you just create this monster, right? Like he's got all these attributes and he's the perfect player. And that's what Max Domi was saying is if you were going to build a hockey player, he's the guy.
I would probably build Connor McDavid, but regardless, to the point of Roope Hintz, like watch this guy in this round, pay attention to him. He is one of the best players that we're not talking about. And also, by the way, what I like to see in the first round, and I think we'll see more of it, was Tyler Seguin making a big impact. You know, everything that Tyler Seguin went through to get back into this game, back to playing with all the injuries that he had, to see him making a big impact in the playoffs, that I think will remain to be significant. So, all right, second round picks. I got New Jersey, Florida, Edmonton, and Dallas. And you don't remember who you have because you did them in a stupor in Vegas.
I think I remember. I have Toronto, Carolina, Vegas, and Dallas.
So we disagree on, we agree on one of those four.
Yes.
So there you go.
Is going to look really smart. One of us is going to look really stupid. I'm in Vegas. I know who I'm putting my money on, but the fans can decide who they want to put their money on.
Look, I got to tell you, after this first round, after watching game 7 Sunday night, I think you got to be crazy to gamble on this game. I think you got to be just nuts to gamble on this game. We have no idea what's going to happen. No clue.
My Uber driver won $11 on the Golden Knights. He bet the series after game 1. He said the odds went up. He put $10 on. He won 21. He was all happy with himself. So somebody figured it out.
Good. You probably didn't even tip him either, right?
I did. So he could make another wager.
There you go. One last thing. First round MVP. Who was it for you?
I think I got to go with Matthew Tkachuk.
Yep.
He wasn't the best player in the first round, but he accomplished the greatest thing. So, I got to go with him.
I'm going with Tkachuk as well. He had a huge impact on the Panthers, and that is why they're in the second round. It begins tonight, Tuesday night. We thank Emily Benjamin for joining us to talk about the Bruins fallout, of which there will be more. And I will be dealing with some Rangers fallout this week as well, from them losing as the second round goes on.
By the way, Dan, just got a very important text from my son, and he said, you make sure you tell that Dan Rosen he needs to make better picks for the second round.
Yeah.
So there you are.
There, I know. I was 3-5 in the first round. Not so good. Not so good.
Man, anyway. When you're getting chirped by the 18-year-olds, you're in trouble, buddy.
Yeah. So we pretend we know, right, Sean?
Exactly. They could put anybody on this podcast.
All right. Well, the second round, like we said, enjoy it. It begins tonight. Enjoy the hockey.